TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Testing the waters, our radioactive ocean, 3 years after Fukushima. In an age where the ocean currents are as well mapped as river systems on land, there has never been any doubt that radiation flowing into the ocean at Fukushima would eventually arrive at the west coast of North America, carried by the black tide, the Kuroshio Current. It was just a question of time and what the risks might be once they arrived. Canada was going to be the canary in the coal mine. The Kuroshio Current arrives there first and then branches down along the coast of the U.S. Researchers from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans had been looking for the signal in waters as far out as 1,500 kilometers west of Vancouver since the disaster in 2011. And indeed, in mid-February 2014, the Canadian Department of Fisheries reported at the meeting of the American Geophysical Union in Hawaii that they detected the radioactive signal as early as June of 2013. Reporters from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, interviewed John Smith, a chemical oceanographer at Bedford Institute. He co-authored the report. Smith noted that the radiation levels detected were extremely low, far lower than allowable levels in drinking water. His conclusion was, there's no human health or environmental radiological concern. Now, given that nobody's going to drink ocean water, the comparison to drinking water is somewhat besides the point, but maybe more to the point are the following considerations. We know that radioactive isotopes are taken in by marine creatures, up to fish, and by ocean plants, some of which we eat, and bioaccumulate to higher concentrations. We know that radioactive isotopes settle into the ocean floor and concentrate over time. We know that the releases of radioactive isotopes have not stopped at Fukushima, and often are reported in higher concentrations now than previously admitted. And there is the terrifying potential of a subsequent accident at Fukushima, triggered by another earthquake or tsunami. Another important consideration that is often neglected by marine scientists are the medical effects of radioisotopes on human beings. They often do not understand that an isotope that measures low on a Geiger counter can become dangerous to humans when it is ingested with seafood or inhaled and irradiates the body from within as so-called internal emitter. All these are very good reasons for having organized radiation monitoring along the west coast of North America. Ken Bissler from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts, whose initiative and fundraising sent a research vessel into the waters off Fukushima only 12 weeks after the accident in 2011, has made an appeal to federal institutions to take on the monitoring of water off the West Coast. In a recent PBS documentary, he reports that he made proposals to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, to the EPA, to the Department of Energy, to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and even to NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They all declined, stating that this was not their responsibility. So Bissler, who also expects that concentrations of radioactive isotopes off the U.S. West Coast will not be very high, nevertheless believes that monitoring must begin immediately. The early months of 2014 will be the last months where baseline of radioactivity can be established before the arrival of the plume from Fukushima. Bislow also believes that the public has a right to know and be empowered to take appropriate action. Now, Ken Bisler has already taken the initiative for organized sampling of seawater to be analyzed by his lab at Woods Hole. It's one of the intriguing efforts that's a mix of crowdsourcing in conjunction with scientific institutions. And more about that and how to participate in a moment. Meanwhile, people with personal radiation meters, Geiger counters, have taken matters into their own hands and are coming up with results, as well as issues, how exactly to use Geiger counters and how to understand the results. Around Christmas 2013, a video went viral on YouTube showing a man, Geiger counter in hand, walking down a beach near Half Moon Bay in California and showing ever-rising and abnormally high readings as he approached the black sands portion of the beach. As the video propagated across the internet, the immediate reaction was fear. Fukushima radiation was suspected to have arrived on California beaches. Others came to the beach to replicate the measurements. Here's a reporter for Infowars.com, uploaded January 8, 2014. By the way, the original video that went viral has disappeared.
We're south of San Francisco, just a little bit south of Pillar Point Harbor at Surfers Beach, where the viral video was shot showing high radiation levels. The local newspapers here are reporting that a CPM of 30 is what's normal for this location. So we have 70 right now. Let's turn around to the black silt where the man in the video said he had very high readings and see what those read out. This is the black silt area. As you can see, the meter is picking up speed here. We jump to 90, 104, 120, 128, 144. 162, still climbing. 194. 222. 240. 264. 262. 270. 284. 286. 292. And remember, they say 30 is what's normal for this location. Now they're disputing that this isn't the cesium-137. They're saying this is radium and other things that naturally occur in the environment. Whatever it is abnormally high. And so we're gonna be out here all week long, not just here in California, but driving all the way up the coast to see what the locals think about these situations and what they think it is. This is Jakari Jackson for Infowars.com.
The reporter referred to the issue raised. Is the cesium-147 or cesium-134 the signature isotope that indicates it is from Fukushima? The same question was raised and answered by Dan Seith of International Medcom in Sebastopol, California. His company built the Geiger counter that was used on the beach. Dan and a small support team arrived at the beach with three radiation detectors, the Pancake Tube Inspector Alert, a B. Geigy Nano, especially built for Fukushima and in use with a data collection site Safecast, and a high-end instrument called Spectrum Analyzer by Berkeley Nucleonics. Here's Dan walking onto the beach at Half Moon Bay, California, slowly approaching the black sand along the upper edge of the beach.
Okay, we're here on the beach, on Surfers Beach. We have found, as others have reported, that the dark areas of the sand are the ones that have a little more activity than the light areas. and we're going to take out the spectrum analyzer right now, and we're going to take a reading right here at this spot and see what we're seeing. We're building the spectra right now. It's already identified this is thorium-232, radium-226. We're not seeing anything that looks like something coming from Fukushima Daiichi. I traveled to Japan 9 times since the accident, and I've been on a beach in Iwaki, which is in Fukushima Prefecture, and looked at the spectra there with this same instrument. And primarily what you see there is cesium-137 and cesium-134. And I'm not seeing a trace of either of those here. We've got one of Safecast's devices with us. This is it's called a B-Geigy Nano. It's an open source radiation detector. This collects data, collects it on a micro SD card, and it pairs it with the time and date and the GPS coordinates, which are received with this GPS receiver that's built into it. So we're gonna walk up and down the beach and profile this. We also use this driving down here, strapped to the passenger side window on the car. That's the way it's used a lot in Japan.
There's now a map of the profile of the beach on the Safecast website. Primarily, Safecast is mapping the radiation levels in the areas around Fukushima and in Tokyo. Established 1 week after the 2011 Fukushima disaster, Safecast says it has collected 15 million data points with these portable counters and about 320 fixed sensors installed across the country. About two-thirds of the data come from Fukushima. It has been published on the group's website and also converted into maps that display on iPhones and other handheld devices. Slowly, the technology is coming to the US, and maps are now being created throughout the country. Even though the detection record of pancake-type Geiger counters is excellent, and they became instrumental in saving children at Fukushima from being put back on irradiated playgrounds, and even though they are the industry standard and widely used in medical applications, radiation cleanup, as well as early discovery of malfunctions at nuclear power plants, and also in discovering radioisotopes from mining, as well as oil drilling and fracking, and even though they are useful in personal applications, like early warning of an incident, as well as in checking air filters or rain collection places for evidence of fallout around people's homes, they have one problem, as high-end radiation detection devices, pancake Geiger tube counters, are able to detect 4 different forms of radiation, alpha, beta, and gamma radiation, as well as X-rays. But they cannot tell which form of radiation is producing the high readings. That was the problem on the beach at Half Moon Bay. Which radioactive isotope caused the high readings? Was it cesium-134 and 137, or was it something else? In these cases, another instrument is needed. The spectrum analyzer that Dan Scythe took to the beach and also used at Fukushima, is able to discover the specific isotope that is emitting the radiation, if that isotope is giving off gamma radiation. As these instruments are expensive, Dan Scythe recommends that community groups make friends with local hospitals and colleges that often own high-end isotope scanners and other detectors. They can discover high radiation levels with the handheld Geiger counters and then bring the material in to be tested. Not that the high readings of naturally occurring radiation are of no concern, and people have died as a consequence. We can just hope that over 1 million years of co-evolution of humans with that kind of radiation may have made us more able to tolerate it. The problem is that after 1944, mankind has added hundreds more radioactive elements and found the most devilish ways of spreading them around the globe, such as nuclear power plants and uranium weapons and atmospheric bomb testing. In fact, as the first water samples are being analyzed, they often show the particular cesium isotope that was dispersed by these explosions. That was some of the work of Dan Scythe, president of International Medcom, a small company based in Sebastopol, California. They have made Geiger counters and other radiation detection instruments since 1986. In the opinion of many individuals and organizations, radiation monitoring needs to begin on the West Coast before the predicted arrival of the Fukushima plume in the summer of 2014. Water is especially hard to analyze. After all, it's a very effective radiation shield used in nuclear cooling pools and now throughout Fukushima to keep the radiation down. The effort that is beginning now between Ken Bissler of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and the public at large is yet another inspiring effort at crowdsourcing and people's participation. If NOAA, the EPA, the DOE, the NRC, and even NIST can't do it and won't do it, the people can and have begun to do so. At the website of Woods Hole, ourradioactiveocean.org, all that is needed is being explained. Participants so far range from colleges to First Nations in Canada, community groups to individuals, to the David Suzuki Foundation, to a local radio station in Santa Cruz. The task is to raise $550 per test, get a test kit shipped, fill the 5-gallon container with water, and ship it back to Woods Hole by UPS. There the water will be carefully evaporated and the remaining material analyzed. Here's Ken Bissler in his noisy lab explaining what comes next.
After collecting each sample back in the lab, we pass it through a special resin that isolates the cesium isotopes from the rest of the naturally occurring radionuclides in your sample. They're dried, they're put in a little plastic vial like this. We bring them down here to our counting lab. Now we use a very specialized piece of equipment, cost over $75,000, called a high purity germanium detector. I'm gonna open one of these up. There's lead and copper here to shield it from some of the background radiation that actually is higher in activity than what's in our sample. So we put our sample in the chamber, we close it back up, and it remains there for over 24 hours to detect the amount of radioactivity measured in units of becquerels, or how many decays per second are coming from that sample. Once we have those data, we put them on our website for everybody to share and track the Fukushima radionuclides crossing the Pacific.
That was Ken Bissler. As of March 2014, testing has begun, and the results so far include La Jolla and Point Reyes, California, and two locations in Washington state. Four samples from these three locations show no detectable Fukushima cesium. We know this because Fukushima released equal amounts of two isotopes of cesium, the shorter-lived cesium-134 and the longer-lived cesium-137. Cesium-137 was indeed found at levels of 1.5 becquerel per cubic meter, but this was already detectable prior to releases at Fukushima and came primarily from nuclear weapons testing in the Pacific during the 1950s and 60s. That's the end of the quote from the website ourradioactiveocean.org. Ken Bissler is senior scientist for marine chemistry at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. He has been involved in analyzing radiation releases from nuclear accidents since Chernobyl. There he did geochemical studies of the Black Sea, looking for plutonium isotopes and the behavior of fallout plutonium in seawater and groundwater. At the same time as Ken Bisler's efforts through Woods Hole are getting underway, a West Coast study is being launched that will test for cesium levels in the kelp forests along the coastline of North America, from Zodiac Island, Alaska to Baja, California. Kelp Watch 2014 was initiated by Stephen Manley, a biology professor at California State University, Long Beach, and is now supported by 50 other scientists and institutions. Professor Manley and Kelp Watch also expect that radioactive contamination from Fukushima will reach the West Coast in the middle of 2014. Using the first February and March 2014 samplings as a baseline, researchers want to discover whether there's any presence and buildup of radioactive cesium-134 and 137 as the year progresses. Two other sampling periods are scheduled for July and October. Manley said, to his knowledge, this is the first such effort off the West Coast. Kelp absorbs materials out of the water through rod blades that act as sponges, efficiently concentrating salts and other materials, including radioactive isotopes. Kelp forests are a productive and complex ecosystem that directly affects more than 1,000 other organisms. Professor Manley says, certain fish feed directly on the kelp. Other fish feed indirectly by eating other organisms. If cesium is found in the kelp, the fish are going to have some in them. Now, is it enough to worry about? Probably not. But people have the right to know what's there. This is not the first study of Fukushima radiation that Manley has done. A month after the accident, he found radioactive iodine in kelp on the West Coast. The iodine had traveled from the nuclear power plant through the atmosphere. It got here quickly and disappeared quickly due to its very short half-life. Within a few months, the radioactive iodine was gone. Manley said the radioactivity of 2011 posed no health risk to humans and had no effects on the giant kelp or on fish or other marine life. As I am recording this program in late March, Kelp Watch 2014 actually has gotten underway. Manley and his team gathered about 25 pounds of kelp past the break wall of Long Beach. Meanwhile, 40 other kelp collections by the Kelp Watch 2014 teams and many volunteers took place from Alaska to Baja, California, just ahead of the third anniversary of the earthquake and tsunami on the Japanese coast. The teams will send their kelp samples to Kai Vetter, a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and head of the Applied Nuclear Physics Program at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. Vetter also has been measuring signals from Fukushima in California since the accident. CBS News 8 covered the San Diego collection by Kelp Watch 2014 at the end of February. Here are excerpts of their report.
It's been 3 years since the Fukushima nuclear power plant disaster in Japan. This April, radiation from Japan is expected to arrive in the ocean waters off San Diego. As CBS News 8's Marcella Lee reports, local scientists are preparing to measure the effects.
There are legitimate concerns about radiation arriving on the West Coast from the March 2011 Fukushima disaster in Japan. Experts believe the levels in San Diego, however, will be low.
The area right around where the disaster occurred, yeah, there's a much bigger concern, a much bigger problem there, and much more easily identifiable.
San Diego State Biology Professor Matthew Edwards is one of 40 scientists along the West Coast who will start taking kelp forest samples this week from Baja all the way up to Alaska.
From a biological standpoint, giant kelp, it's kind of a barrier along the coast. Anything that is approaching the coast has to go through the kelp forest to get to our coast.
Professor Edwards says the kelp filters and concentrates a radioactive isotope from the disaster in Japan called cesium that they can test for.
Kelp uptakes things from the environment into its tissues. It'll uptake metals and chemicals, and it will uptake cesium.
For the next 12 months, scientists will collect the kelp offshore, dry it out, then grind it down into a powder. In its powder form, the kelp will then be sent to UC Berkeley to be tested in a lab for radiation. Scientists do not expect to find levels that are a risk to humans.
Personally, I don't think we're going to see things that are of a dangerous level. I don't know that, but that is the belief going in. But there's likely that we will be able to detect it.
The kelp test should show the average levels of radiation in the ocean and give an indication when the levels are rising and falling.
My hope would be that these levels are going to be so low that they're not of concern. You know, I'm just like everyone else. You know, the ocean to me is something that I not only study, but I use.
Marcella Lee, CBS News 8.
The kelp study is being led by Cal State Long Beach biology professor Stephen Manley. Scientists will begin collecting the first samples up and down the coast this week.
That was Professor Matthew Edwards, interviewed by Marcella Lee from CBS News 8. Edwards works at the Marine Plant Ecology Lab at San Diego State University. His specialty are seaweeds and kelp forests. The ecology program area at SDSU does research in California, Washington, Alaska, Mexico, Chile, and Peru. They work on the effects of global warming and El Niño Southern Oscillations on marine seaweeds. Very similar to the Ken Bisler water testing project, Kelp Watch 2014 depends on volunteers and crowdsourcing. Come back for the conclusion of this program when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. You can get information on how to order a CD at cost of the one-hour program on Testing the Waters, Our Radioactive Ocean by calling 1-707-463-2654. You can also place an order on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation on TUC's website keeps this program on the air. That's tucradio.org or 707-463-2654 for more information. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.